You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
I recently got a fan letter from someone who said they had actually identified as a lesbian their whole life, and now they realized through my posts and things I write about that they actually identify as pansexual.
Oh, was that Melody?
Wait a minute. No.
And I do appreciate your reply.
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together. See what it's all about.
Dyking out, dyking out, dyking out, dyking out.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast hosted by two women without electricity just looking for some excitement with someone of the same sex. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're dyking out with actress Natasha Negavanlis about bi-pan myths.
Ooh, like how pansexuals aren't people attracted to actual pans?
Exactly.
Yeah, go figure. Well, I am finally starting to unpack my belongings, which means I'm hoping, Melody, that next week we can have some actual announcements.
Yes.
And start putting on some fun virtual shows again. We know you haulers love those. And once I get my shit together, I bear the responsibility for us not doing as much lately. But in the meantime, you know, this week for an announcement, I just want to give a shout out to There Is No Mountain. That is the band who does our theme song. Two of the best people you'll ever meet. And they have loads of great music that you can check out.
Yes. Happy Valentine's Day, Carolyn.
Oh, happy Valentine's Day.
And to all those who celebrate.
Right. Yeah. Great way to celebrate by recording a podcast.
With my work wife. Oh, my goodness.
Right.
It's the only way I'm celebrating. We're otherwise not doing anything. I woke Allie up this morning by saying happy Valentine's Day, and she never really tries to wake up. It takes a few attempts when I do. Try to shake her awake, but her eyes flew open because she realized it was Valentine's Day. So it's safe to say we're not doing anything today.
Right, right. I approached Cecilia this morning and I said, I hope it's understandable that I didn't get you anything for Valentine's Day. And she's like, didn't even need to mention it.
Yeah.
That is well understood. But what we did do was watch a new lesbian movie that came out in theaters for now and will be streaming on March 2nd, and that is The World to Come.
Yes. Well, we attended a virtual screening, and I'm glad it's out so soon so we can talk about it on the following podcast because I've got some thoughts.
Yeah, there's, you know, we talked about it when we saw the preview. Just so everybody knows, it is a film that was directed by Mona Fassvold and stars Vanessa Kirby and Catherine Waterston in the lead roles of Tally and Abigail. And it was a movie that was based on a short story written by Jim Shepherd, and it was adapted into a screenplay by two men whose name I do not know. Surprise, surprise. And yeah, we saw the movie. I'm going to say my first impression is that it exceeded my expectations based on the preview.
Oh, absolutely. So we had, I'd known about this screening and I kind of assumed I wouldn't be watching.
I was ready to take one for the team. I was like, Melody, you absolutely do not need to watch this slow burn, old timey white lesbian movie. I will do that for the both of us.
I said the white co-host will watch it and cover it on the podcast because I've had enough.
That's my beat.
But I did put it on in the background, so I didn't really pay attention. But then I just, like, every time I'd glance over, I was like, wait a minute, this is gorgeous. And maybe like a third of the way in, I actually like sat down and was like, okay, I'm watching this. And it did exceed my expectations. It was directed by a woman. So that's good, even though it was written by two men and produced by Casely Affleck. it was stunning. It was gorgeous.
It was very well done.
Yeah. So we must say that.
I thought it was actually going to be about like frontier lesbians. So it's two women who are married to men. They are living in what's upstate New York, so probably not too far from where I live right now, which was like a little bit exciting because it reminded me of like, ooh, maybe this is like the predecessor of the lesbians who used to live in my house, you know?
Yeah.
And the house that they live in, like the outside shot, I'm like, oh my gosh, this kind of looks like our house a little bit and like the surrounding area. So Cecilia and I were just pretending it was like more of the mythology of our very gay house. And that really pulled us in. Cecilia was into it from the start, as she often is with these movies, but she was like excited. She was there for it. I was really skeptical because it's like the first scene where these women see each other, it's like immediately like they catch each other's eyes and they like can't stop staring. And it's just like really like, oh my, like I just saw my soulmate and I'm locking eyes with them. I'm like, this never happened. These are just like two women.
It was across
seeing each other.
Big distance too.
A big, like, it was like two football fields.
You can't see each other.
Two football fields. And I know that Tally has gorgeous hair, gorgeous red curly hair in this, but
yeah.
Like that was a very long gaze. So I'm like, this feels very contrived, very forced. But then it kind of delves into like this friendship and they're like inseparable and there's lots of longing and, you know, they're both in marriages that for various reasons, they're obviously very not happy with and going through their own things. The setup too, like right in the beginning, Abigail's character, it starts off telling how she like lost her child. So I'm like, all right. So we have a very sad woman and then she finds happiness in a lesbian fling. You know, I was just so skeptical about it. But then like, as the story builds, the chemistry between the two of them is actually really good. And it's like really a beautiful story of both friendship and love and companionship and just kind of like what it might have been like for women during that time and what it was like to be a wife and have these duties and be just like very isolated in like an upstate New York winter. I don't know. But by the end, I was like, I think this was a good movie.
Yes, me too.
Yeah,
and
I enjoyed it.
Even noticed that the stream on the virtual screening was still live for the next day. So I did go back and watch the beginning. So I watched it from beginning to end. And I do like this film.
But then we both stayed after for the Q&A and were texting each other.
Yes. So
all night about it. So let's get into it.
Yes. I was a half hour ahead of you. You started the stream a little later than me. So I saw what was probably the gayest moment in a film screening Q&A I have ever seen. And I was just waiting by my phone for you to catch up so we could discuss. Because, like you said, there is palpable chemistry between these actresses. Like, it is so good. And this is the last question in the Q&A. We talk about the direction and the, you know, how they got to milk cows and train for their frontier life. It's moderated by a writer from Variety. And she goes, did you two know each other? It's Catherine Watterson is the actress, and then the woman Vanessa Kirby,
who's in The Crown,
who's actually pretty silent in this Q&A. I was waiting for her to speak, and she kept getting cut off, which was annoying.
She's silent, but also, can I just say, like, her resting face?
Oh yeah, it was. She's in a black turtleneck, leaning against a wall, and just kind of like.
She just like serves this look, and it's in all her interviews, and it's just. I don't even know how to describe it, but it is a look that's
it's a look that's it's being a stoic but like penetrating stare, like it's like really crazy hot. So the two women are asked, "Did you two know each other? Did you have time to rehearse beforehand, or does this dance you do on screen happen to bring it to life?" And there is this crazy pregnant pause of them just like awkwardly squirming, smiling, and not answering.
The smile of Catherine Waterston, it was like
it was like a kid being asked, did you take the candy from the candy jar when I told you not to? It was just this like me. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like pause, and then like this smile spreading, and then like this Cheshire like very smile. nervous giggle, and then Vanessa Kirby just like looking really self-assured, like, I'm not giving away anything, and
left her on her own to stutter through an answer. It was just like, I mean, we just got along right away, and I just like her so much, and she just goes on to just she, like gush rambling about her.
Yeah, rambling, like trying to justify how the chemistry, and then kind of backtracking, being like, well, I don't know, I think it was just the script.
After another pause of her being like, but she's so great and I love her as an actress, and then she goes, but you know what, no, I'm not so sure it really matters how much I love her. Does this hard pivot, and then just like blames the script for their amazing chemistry.
Yeah, that the script is responsible for the chemistry, which is not it. So I texted Melody. I was like, so ... they fucked.
Yeah.
Like the very strong impression that these two may be off screen. And I'm happy to start that rumor.
Yeah. After seeing that Q&A. Oh, man. I did notice actually an hour ago, Valerie Complex, past guest, amazing film critic, had
interviewed
them. So there's like a 5-minute interview about how they both saw their characters' emotional journeys, which is up on pride.com. And that's pretty good. Everyone's sharing that, you know, Catherine Waterson, this pull quote from an interview where she's saying, I would love to have made this film 5 times. And also that she had read the Ann Lister book, she mentions, to do some research for the role. I've started this morning. Today I'm just mining Twitter for more gay clues about Catherine Waterson.
Recently divorced?
Yeah.
Yeah. Recently divorced from a man, so.
Maybe after these scenes?
Right. I watched her struggle to answer that question about 5 times, and I had to call Cecilia in from the other room because she like left during the Q&A. I was like, no, come back here and tell me what this says to you. And she's like, oh my god, they did it. It's like they totally did it.
I'm
like,
Cecilia saying it, if pure Cecilia, who's not
pure,
like
Cecilia's picking up on it,
because we reach a lot of the time here,
right? Right. She definitely saw it. So this movie has sparked like a lot of different reactions, especially, you know, a lot of jokes or comments from the community about like, oh, another movie starring like two white women with no electricity. Why is this so, you know, and like their husbands are there. Why do we keep getting this story? And then there was an article on out.com that was written by May Rood. And May has written a lot for Out of Straddle before and writes for a lot of publications and has a lot of great stuff. So this is nothing about or nothing against May. But the title of this article was We Have Enough Tragic White Lesbian Period Romances. Move on. But like the picture has like Bly Manor in it. I'm like,
front
okay,
and center.
Bly- yeah, I'm like, Bly Manor is like a different category. And then as I was reading the examples and kind of thinking on it, because it is my gut reaction when I see a preview like this, I'm like, oh, another one. But then I was thinking about it and I'm like, you know, some of these like Wild Nights with Emily and Ammonite and Gentleman Jack, like these are stories about actual women, some of them whose sexuality was erased by history and filmmakers are trying to like reclaim them in film form. So I don't want us to like not tell these stories. I would just like to add on,
right,
and have more opportunities for more diverse people to tell more stories set in present day would be nice, because it is crazy to think like of all the queer content that's been made since the 90s, how much of it is set back like at least 60 years ago. Yeah. I'm glad that Carol exists. You know, I'm glad Disobedience exists. I'm glad that, you know, The Favorite exists. I just want more of the other stuff, but I don't think we have to say like, stop this, you know? It's just like more please and more different.
Yeah.
But that's just my take on it. I don't know. And also, don't put Bly Manor in that category.
Yeah. No Bly Manor on the main picture. I mean, it's also just a very short, biased little blurb. It's not like a full critique and review of the actual film. It's just like,
yeah,
it's just seeing white. I mean, yeah, it's just. It's right. What we always say, right?
Yeah, yeah. It just struck me as like a weird thing that was supposed to be maybe a review of the film, and then it wasn't. And then it was just like, stop making these movies. I'm like, oh, yeah, but, you know, different movies have different things to offer. And like, how many movies do straight people have that are period pieces? And then also to say, stop making like tragedies. Like, that's love stories either end in like tragedy or happy ending. Like, that's the conflict, that's the drama. So to be like, stop making the I'd be so bored if every lesbian movie was like a happy ending.
Right.
Happy ending.
I mean, I think that about film in general, but
right,
like, yeah, I can't wait until like decades from now where we're just like, God, can't one of them just die? Or like, like we're just gonna get to a right. point after all this backlash where it is just like dykes of all different shapes and sizes ending right. up happily ever after in their polyamorous multiracial stories.
Like Ammonite wasn't even a tragedy. Like, just because they don't end up together doesn't mean it's a tragedy.
The
like,
tragedy is we spent $20 to rent it. That's the tragedy. I'll never get
and
over.
And they don't even let you keep the scene.
Yeah.
If it was like $20, but you permanently own that like 4 minutes.
Yeah.
then that would have been a bargain. Is that on YouTube yet? Anyway.
Anyway.
Moving on. You know, some more current news. If we want to switch into present day queer community, have to mention that Joe McDaniel from a recent episode, who was running a league of her own in Washington, D.C., announced shockingly, like a week or so after the interview, we had no clue this was coming, that she was leaving her role at a league of her own. So we don't know what the future is of that bar. Hopefully they can find somebody who is awesome and as committed to creating safe spaces for the queer community to run it. But what is exciting is that Joe and Rach Coach Pike have created As You Are, which is a virtual safe space for our community that is inclusive and is having all sorts of virtual events going on in COVID. And then hopefully once the pandemic is over, I'm assuming we'll open as a real physical space. But for right now, you can follow As You Are on Instagram.
As You Are
Bar. And get all the deets. As You Are Bar. And find out about the events that they're putting on. And it's a great way to like organize meetups, do dates through that. It's a cool community and I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yes, do dates.
Do dates.
Just so locked in quarantine for so long that we don't know how to talk, especially about anything social. Just go out and do dates and have a blast.
You know, the cool thing about a virtual lesbian bar or a virtual queer inclusive lesbian bar is that you can, you know, attend these events and have sex in your own bathroom and not get thrown out.
Yeah.
So you can have the bathroom sex and the queer hangouts.
Oh, my God. I'm going to do it. I'm going to join a virtual event and then I'm going to DM Joe and be like, Allie's inside me right now and there's nothing you can do to stop. As you'll recall.
Yeah, try hand checking this.
She's very good at keeping her bar patrons outside of each other. And with a virtual space, I'm ready to really creep it up.
Yeah, we're not going to wear anything from the waist down to these virtual events.
And that's a threat.
Oh, man, speaking of Allie being inside you, Melody, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
Oh, well, since we're not allowed to talk about sex, I won't. Just kidding. We didn't have sex this week. it is just, it's not, it's February. It's a COVID February. I didn't think it could get so bad, but like with the slush and the weather. I'd have to say the gayest thing I did this past week was arrange a FaceTime call between my cat and my dad's new kitten. Yay!
What's the kitten's name?
Bella. Cute. And that's because it rhymes with Stella. They tried to have a kitten a few years ago. My dad was too allergic. And this is how bad the pandemic has been for them. They don't care anymore. My dad is so allergic and they're doing it again. And now they have baby Bella, 4-month-old kitten.
Oh, so it's not named after the Twilight character?
No, no, no.
Okay.
It's named after the cat they had to get rid of, who was named after Stella Artois the beer. My mom loves Stella. So cute. I've told you my dad has like developed a huge addiction to TikTok over this last year, and all those viral cat videos got to him. He is so allergic, but he loves this cat, and he's taking so many allergy medications all day every day to really maximize his love for his new best friend. So cute.
How did the FaceTime work? Did they look at the camera at all? Were they phased?
I think kittens are really into like their reflections and just like look, they'll pay attention. So the kitten was into it, but my cat was not. So that was fun. I mean, like, I'm scraping at the bottom of the barrel. It's just, I don't do anything anymore. But
hey, a cat FaceTime is very gay.
That's gay. I also, I just realized because this morning, the Daily podcast by the New York Times is about robocallers and like scam callers. And that's so funny because I have spent specifically this last week unleashing all of my like pandemic rage on these callers. Like normally you just let it go to voicemail, you reject the call, whatever. Like I'm actually like a psycho picking up every single one of these calls. If I miss one, I call it back. But I'm answering just like either full of sarcastic rage where I'm just like, oh, this I gotta hear. Like, oh, no, no, you gotta, don't miss a detail. Tell me everything. Like, it's either that level of crazy or it's just
okay?
Like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm screaming into the phone and they'll hang up and then I'll call them back.
Oh my gosh,
it's
Melody.
Out of control.
We need to get you back on a stage again.
I know.
ASAP. This is getting dire.
Yeah, we got to get my Sam Kinison ass back on a stage. Like, it's so crazy. It's so crazy. I'm cuddling with my cat. I'm having very cozy, long, you know, days filled with nothing, silence. I spend most of the days alone. Allie's working. And then a phone call comes in and I am screaming. I checked my heart rate on my Fitbit. It was at 133. Okay, that's crazy. That's so crazy.
Oh my gosh.
So I don't know. Maybe that's the gayest thing of the week. My rage.
I'm gonna give it to Cat FaceTime.
Yeah, really just bouncing between those two extremes this past week. we've had multiple Cat FaceTimes. Anyways, Carolyn, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
Oh, definitely waxing my butcher's block, which I wish was a euphemism, but literally applying wax.
I almost Googled butcher's block. Like, I was going to find out it was a part of your vagina. Like, I didn't know.
Yeah, got some butcher block countertops, had to sand them down with four different grits of sandpaper, apply some mineral oil that's food safe, and then apply a thin coat of wax. And that is the gayest thing I did this week, but also honorable mention to the Envirolog, since Melody, your gayest thing in the past was making a fire, but also struggling tremendously to make a fire. Well, I just bought something called an Envirolog, which is not made of wood, but apparently burns cleaner and is better for the environment. And it's made of recycled cardboard and wax. What? And it's in the shape of a log. And it comes in a bag and you just like open the bag up a little bit. And then you light the ends on fire and immediately it just...
Oh, it's like a starter log.
It's like a starter log, but you just... But that's all you use. You don't use actual wood.
Huh.
And it burns for 3 hours. And we did it last night. That was our first time using our fireplace in our new home.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I love that for you. I'm dying to make a fire again.
Speaking of the gayest thing, neither of us can top the gayest thing from our guest this week. So let's get into it. Today we are diking out with award-winning actress Natasha Negovanlis about BIPAN myths. Some of you know Natasha from her titular role in the series Carmilla, as well as the movie based on the series. And more recently, she appeared in movies like Almost Adults and Freelancers Anonymous. She also now has a podcast that's out called Vanlis Presents, so be sure to give that a listen, but not until you've listened to this interview. Natasha, thank you so much for joining us and diking out today. How are you?
I'm good. I'm nervous. I feel like I have to put a disclaimer on this because I identify as pansexual or bisexual and I don't want to appropriate the term out, but I'm so pleased to be on the pod. Thanks for having me.
Just a heads up, I'm bi-pan too and the co-host of Diking Out, so I... feel you on that.
I have a vocal following, which I do appreciate because I love being held accountable, but just wanted to put that out there.
Sure. That being said, what's the gayest thing you did this week, Natasha, before we get into anything?
Okay. Well, I did dye my hair a nice bisexual blue.
Yes.
Nice little ombre. And at the time we're recording this, there was a new moon yesterday. So I did read my tarot cards as a good bisexual witch does.
Love it.
One of the gayest answers we've ever gotten. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I know. Before the pandemic, there was one day where I like saw my psychic advisor and my therapist in this same day. And I was like, this is the most queer millennial day ever. Yeah. And then I like bought some crystals and then was like also like going to a home decorating store with my ex-girlfriend. Like I was currently like sleeping at the couch on the couch at the time. And I was like this and but like it was very civil breakup. And I was like, yeah, this is the queerest day.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. So you read your own tarot. How often do you do that?
I usually don't read my own tarot. I don't do a full reading, but I do like using it as like a journal exercise, you know? So, just like on a new moon, I'm like, cool. What's going to happen for this cycle? What should I like focus on? So it's kind of more like a mindfulness activity rather than like divination for me when I do it for myself anyway, but I do enjoy reading other people's.
How long did it take you to get to a point where you could read other people's?
My mom bought me my deck in 1999. So it has been
nice.
That's around the time I got mine.
Time. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, it's going to be really long time. Yes. It's been like over 20 years.
Love that. Do you get friends who ask you to read their tarot a lot?
I do. Yeah. Not a lot, but once in a while, friends will be like, okay, I need you to FaceTime me now. I need to know what's going on.
What a great pandemic activity.
It has been. Yeah. I've been doing like a lot of Zoom readings for people. I would never do it for money. I would feel strange like that. But when we had a brief lift on our lockdown here in Toronto, where I'm located, I did do a service trade. So my hairstylist cut my hair for me, and then I read her daughter's tarot cards over Zoom.
That's amazing. Yeah. How are things in Toronto?
I mean, we've been in a second lockdown that's been very strict, so nothing is open except for grocery stores since the end of November. That would have been the start of our second one. So it's been a while. I mean, I have a bit of the fatigue, but I'd rather be safe. So, and my people are healthy. I'm healthy. I can't really complain too much, but I am definitely looking forward to like working again.
Yeah. Like, did you have any projects that were put on hold?
I have one digital series that's on hold at the moment, but for the most part, I've mostly been doing like voiceover auditions, which has been great. I would love to work in animation. So if anyone listening to this likes the tessitura,
the dulcet
voice,
then
let me know.
Well, before we get into our topic, there is one thing I wanted to ask you about, and I just want to get like a sense of what it's like to be on the receiving end of this like intense queer fandom. It's something I didn't know about like queer fandom, being someone who's been like out and gay for a while, until I went to my first Klexicon, which was to like speak on a podcasting panel. And then I was like, what is this world? And it was just like all these relationship names I hadn't heard of, these shows I hadn't heard of. And then I was like trying to educate myself. And I'm like, this is nuts. They're really loyal and intense. It reminds me of like K-pop fans. Like how do you feel about knowing that there's like a lot of YouTube montages of you set to a lot of like slow songs?
That's a good way of putting it. At first, it was certainly really overwhelming. So I booked a show called Carmilla and started playing a broody lesbian vampire back in 2014. And so at first, it was definitely very overwhelming and very surreal, I would say. And I also put a lot of pressure on myself, I think, to try to, you know, be the best role model that I could be. Because as someone who did, you know, start identifying and coming out as a teenager and, you know, as someone who was constantly looking for role models and representation, I knew what that felt like. But I didn't know this whole world existed. I have to say I was pretty outside of any sort of like sci-fi or fantasy fandom. So I had no idea it was going to be quite as big as it was. And it was definitely, I feel like I did a lot of growing up from that time, for sure. Like I just, I learned a lot in 6 years, I think, and even more about my own community. And it introduced me to so many wonderful people. And I've said this before in interviews, but I think it was kind of like a blessing in the sense that I was out, but I wasn't necessarily proud. So it was really nice to find that sense of community and meet more like-minded people just through the show.
Were you not proud because there are a lot of myths around bisexuality and pansexuality?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I fluctuate between the terms and, you know, I haven't talked about my sexuality in a long time actually on any podcasts or online. And I used to quite a bit, but I started to think like, you know, my sexual identity is really like the least interesting thing about me, I think. And I'd love to get to a point where I don't really have to justify it or talk about it. But at the same time, I understand the importance of labels because I understand the importance of people just wanting to cling to some kind of community. And so I'm also more vocal about it because I know there are a lot of people on the spectrum of queerness who don't fit into a category of gay or straight, who reach out to me and say, thank you for being open about it because it makes me feel less alone. And that feeling is like the best feeling in the world. If I can help someone not feel like a weirdo, that's awesome. Cause I know there's just a lot of confusion, I think, around it. But I think one of the biggest myths is like that bi or pansexual people are confused in general. Right. So that was something that I think I had to, especially before many people identified as queer. And I think now like Gen Z especially, it's like people are more open talking about being sexually fluid or sexually curious.
Right.
But I think back when I was like 19, 20, you know, there was a lot of myths. There was a myth about it, you know, being really promiscuous or really, you know, quote unquote slutty. I'd be called a bi slut all the time from both queer people and straight people. I think there
which
was...
Which I resent because I don't like people to think I'm any less slutty because I'm a lesbian, you know? Like, why?
Right? Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was going to say, there's nothing
wrong.
Why can't
I be slutty?
There's nothing wrong with being promiscuous. If everyone is right. honest about it and everything right. is consensual and you're being safe, like, go too. But yeah, just this idea, and I think it's been pushed by media a lot too, but that like, by people are the homewreckers or like the mistresses. And it's like, how many straight people cheat on each other? Like you can just be an asshole right. and be any sexuality. Mm-hmm. And I started using the term bi, I think around like 16 years old. And then I had this aversion to the word pansexual for a long time, which I think a lot of people do. Because as someone had mentioned to me like, oh, well, like if you're bi, then you're not being inclusive of non-binary folks. And at first I was like, pansexual, this sounds so pretentious. But then it started to feel like the right word for me, especially when I was, you know, very single and wild and free and experimenting a lot. you know, pansexual made a lot of sense to me. And now I kind of use the words interchangeably, I would say. Now I understand that bisexuality doesn't need to be, you know, exclusionary of gender fluid people. It doesn't need to be right. trans exclusive. My sexuality is absolutely trans inclusive. So yeah, I kind of, for me, I say I use bisexual most of the time when I'm talking to people who I just am too lazy to explain sexuality to. Right. So
yeah, same.
Yeah.
except I don't know exactly what bi plus is. Is that the same thing that we just kind of covered? I'm seeing a lot of bi plus lately.
Really? That's new to me.
Bisexual like plus sign, which I think is pan, bi pan, right?
I think it's people who wanted to still use the term bisexual, but then didn't want people to think that they were being exclusive. But then a lot of bisexual people were like, no, bisexual, the way that I think that it's described like by, you know, GLAAD and HRC and scholars now, it's like my gender, like same gender and genders that aren't the same. And that's the duality. It's not like,
okay.
So like officially it seems like in the gay literature that the term bisexual has evolved to equate. And then I read that like pansexuality is under the bisexuality umbrella, but the real experience is that I think people use it interchangeably. I mean, I know Melody, like you came out as bisexual on the podcast and then you refer to yourself as pan sometimes and use it interchangeably.
Yeah,
and
I don't
think anyone's mind exploded yet. So I think everyone kind of gets it, you know?
For me, it just really means that I'm attracted to people. I'm very attracted to people's minds. people's personalities more so than anything, to the point where like there was a time when I was questioning whether or not I was on the gray asexual spectrum. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about that because asexual people or gray asexual people can still experience sexual desire, but it's not often. And I think largely that was because then there's so many different terms for this, but I think it's like largely because right. I was like, I learned about, you know, demisexuality where it's like, okay, so really it's more that I really need to like know a person and have emotions involved to be attracted to them. And then I learned about like, you know, even people who identify as like sapiosexual where it's like the attraction to intelligence or talent or right. things like that. And because even from the time I was a kid and like growing up and hit puberty, when people were really like boy crazy and stuff, I never experienced that, which was like, okay, yeah, because I generally you know, find women more aesthetically pleasing. But I think also too, it was just like, yeah, I would never see someone, you know, at a club or like walking down the street and be like, oh, that person's so hot. I totally want to bone them, you know, but that doesn't mean that I'm not a sexual person either. So, cause it's like, right. when I do like someone, I'm highly sexual. And I think too, I was like working through sexual traumas, which I also like want to clarify that not everyone who identifies as gray asexual or asexual has experienced trauma. And it is like a valid identity that yeah. some people are yeah. just born with. I know that's a myth. But I think for me in that time, I was like going through just massive fluctuations in my own mental health stuff where it would be like, yeah, sure. either hypersexual or not at all for like years at a time. And yeah. I think a lot of that was like processing things because after like good solid 2.5 years of therapy, I'm just like, I can breathe now. Cool. I think I'm like just the right amount of sexual now for me.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Melody, I feel like I need to apologize for being a little bit insufferable lately.
Why, Carolyn? Because you won't stop talking about your new house?
And here I was thinking I was holding myself back, but alas, no. It's because I won't shut up about how well I've been sleeping.
Oh, well, that's fine because we both have the same Helix mattress, so I get it.
Well, I finally got my bed set up in my new house. Did I mention that I moved into a new house? Anyway, I was so excited to sleep on my new Helix mattress, and it honestly exceeded the hype for me because I am sleeping like Tally in the end of the world to come.
Oh my God. That's because you took the Helix sleep quiz, which recommends the right mattress for your body and sleep style.
Turns out it was more accurate than a BuzzFeed quiz because it truly had me pegged. They have different levels of firmness, mattresses that help keep you cool at night, and even ones for bodies of all sizes. And I was matched with the Helix Dusk Luxe mattress, which has a medium feel, is good for back and stomach sleepers, and has zoned lumbar support.
Oh, that must be why my back has been feeling so much better this past month. If you're in the market for a new mattress, just go to helixsleep.com/dykingout and take the 2-minute sleep quiz where they'll pair you with a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life.
That's not even an exaggeration. It's been a very noticeable difference for me, but I'm guessing for other folks as well because it was awarded the overall mattress pick last year by GQ and Wired magazine.
It ships free to your door and has a 10-year warranty. Plus, you can try it out for 100 nights risk-free.
Sounds like a dream. Well, Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/dykingout. That's helixsleep.com/dykingout.
It's funny because I feel like it's because, you know, a lot of us who are older, like most of older, like 30, I don't know.
Very old. I just saw a meme and I don't know who did it, so I can't credit it, but it was like, it is canon that the parents from Rugrats were supposed to be 33. And I was like, oh my God.
No.
I know, they look so
old. I felt that in all over. I just got goosebumps.
So yeah, no. We're old now.
Yeah. But Phil and Will's mom was a lesbian, just to, while we're talking about the Rugrats.
Yes, of course.
Just want to put that on the record.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely at the age now where, like, I'm watching a lot of shows and I'm, like, relating to the teenagers still. And then, like, the mom says their age. I'm like, oh, the mom's younger than me. Great, great.
I know. Why on sitcoms are we still pushing this myth that, like, everyone's having a kid at 24 still? Like, I know it still happens, right? And no judgment to, you know, that's great. But, like, there's this weird thing where I'm like, I really do want to see a show where, like, it is a 38-year-old woman having her first child.
Yes. Right, right. Yeah, so I feel like, you know, maybe the experience is different for younger people now, but the norm that we were all taught growing up is that, like, well, one, like, cis hetero culture is, like, normal, and then also that being, like, sexual is normal, but it's always been different for men being sexual and women being sexual. But I feel like there's some type of idea of what's normal that's been formed by, like, the media and society and religion. And then when we don't conform to that, we think that there's, like, something wrong with us, you know? So just, like, that thing of, like, not being necessarily sexually attracted to somebody or to people right away until you get to know them. And you're like, oh, well, I guess there's something wrong with me. And, like, you know, I must not be like everybody else. And, you know, we had Janine Garofalo on the podcast a while back talking about being asexual. And she was like, I think a lot more people are asexual or, like, closer to asexual than admit it. Because to say that you're just not into sex is, like, crazy to people. And it's, like, more of a hassle than it's worth. And then you don't want to seem like a weirdo for being like, yeah, I'm not that into sex, you know, like that can be very off-putting for people. So then people are kind of quiet about things and, you know,
yeah.
I'm hoping,
oh, yeah,
that that's changing more.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think more so with cis men, it would be like, if I didn't sleep with them by the fourth date, they would ghost me or not want to see me anymore. So with men than with women. But I do find, I guess that's like the myth or joke about lesbian bed death as well. It's like, you know, I think with women, it's like, I've had very sexual relationships with women, but it's also, there's just a bit more understanding and respect towards, like, getting to know one another truly first. That's such a good point. And I feel when I look back too, it's like I've never done anything that wasn't consensual or that I didn't, you know, make the decision to do. But there were definitely a lot of times where it was sort of like, oh, okay, well, this is what adults do. Let's get this over with kind of thing versus, like, yeah, right, very innate, right, like, carnal desire. And, like, I don't know, sex is so much
nicer for me anyway. I mean, everyone's different. Right. And I really am like very open about talking about sex. And I think that's what confuses people too, is like, they're like, well, how could she be like on any kind of spectrum or even question that because she's so comfortable talking about it? And I was like, well, the amount of people who are having tons of sex and having bad sex and are so uncomfortable talking about it is astonishing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, we should talk about it.
Yeah. It still feels like that's like a very taboo place. Because when I first learned about, and it was through doing this podcast and listeners writing in with questions, we got this one email I remember about someone being like, well, first I thought I was aromantic and then I realized I was demi. But what if I'm like, what are these terms? And I'm reading them. I'm like, I don't get why these terms exist, because these all just seem like normal things and are just personal preferences. Yeah. But then I'm like, well, I guess I get why they exist though, because these people are taught that like, that it's like a subset or it's like not normal, or like that they need to label it something because it's not something that's like widely accepted as like a valid mode to operate in, when it is, you know?
One thing I've learned from my followers as well is that labels are not necessarily about being exclusive, but it is about reaching out and trying to find community. Then the tricky thing with that is people get very stuck on labels. So one of the things I really try to teach to my younger followers who look up to me who are bi or pan identifying is like, it's okay for you to change your mind. And it doesn't mean you're confused, and it doesn't mean you were disingenuous when you identified a certain way. And I recently got a fan letter from someone who said they had actually identified as a lesbian their whole life, and now they realized through my posts and things I write about that they actually identify as pansexual.
Oh, was that Melody?
Wait a minute. No.
And I do appreciate your reply. No, that's very real. That happens. And I think that's more of those stories need to be shared to bust that myth that it's just a phase or stepping stone on your way to like your full actualized homo self or just experimenting when you go back to heterosexuality. Like, I very much thought I was a lesbian and had to take a step back, go to therapy, realize like what was actually keeping me from men. There was a lot of trauma, but had to acknowledge that I am very fluid and attracted to just people.
Yeah.
But I was convinced I was a lesbian.
I mean, because they're generally trash. But
yes. So it's like you can't blame me. But yeah, I need more of those stories out there to bust this specific myth, at least. That's why I love Desiree Akvon's The Bisexual. We talk about it a lot on this show, but I love that there's at least a whole show that people can watch on Hulu centered around this story.
Do you find that you ever feel pressure to like perform your sexuality or perform your gender based on the gender of the person you're dating?
Kind of. Yeah. Especially when I was first dating girls after dating a man, like I realized I was bi, I experimented with all different genders, and then I like did settle down and have a boyfriend for 2 years. But it was coming out of that relationship that I really felt like I had something to prove. I do have a lot of shame that I still struggle with and hangups. And I was definitely like performing to be such a lesbian that I didn't even bring it up when I became a co-host of this podcast. I just let people think I was a lesbian until eventually we were interviewing Desiree Akvon. And I was like, I'm going to take this opportunity to say me too.
I can feel it like when I hear from our listeners too, and just friends I know who are bisexual, that when they're with men, they feel like a lot of either like guilt or like pressure to like justify their space in the queer community.
Yeah, and big time. I find what's really interesting is that when bisexual men are dating men, it's assumed that they're gay.
Yep.
And when bisexual women are dating women, it's assumed that they're actually straight and just experimenting. And that totally. I find very, very interesting. It's like the kind of fetishization of sexuality and the differences between bi men and bi women. And I really feel for bi men though. I mean, I have to say, as much as it's annoying to be like hypersexualized and not taken seriously by people, there is still, I don't feel the threat of violence as much if I'm seen outside kissing a woman than some of my bi male friends might feel, because they have this, you know, expectation from the gay communities that they're actually just a stepping stone. They're on a stepping stone towards being gay. And then there's a frat boy kind of mentality with straight men where they have a lot of homophobia towards them. And then on top of that, like, some of my bi male friends have told me that they are afraid to come out to like women they've dated or go on dates with, because there are a lot of straight women who are afraid to be with men who've had sex with other men. And
oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, to me, that's there. Obviously there's a lot of homophobia ingrained in that. And, you know, I think these kind of unfortunate stereotypes or myths about, you know, STDs and things like that. But I'm like, girls, like, honey, you should be more concerned about the straight men that you're having sex with, because the majority of the bi men I know are very safe and very responsible, if not like more responsible when they're having sex. And I was like, I don't know many straight men who like put a rubber on it. So,
right. Like,
you're more likely to get HPV from a straight man. I'm sorry. There's no scientific base for this. This is my own anecdotal experience, but
sounds like science to me. I don't know.
This is a myth I'll push.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is there a difference in the way that cis men and women react to bi or pan identities, or are they both equally threatened? Or am I pushing a myth saying that they are threatened by?
I think it's really dependent on the person. Right. I don't find straight women are ever particularly quote unquote threatened or by my sexuality. Definitely lesbians for sure, because there is myth that all bi women just quote unquote end up with men, whatever that means. But, and then with some straight men, you either get the like, oh, that's hot, can we have a threesome thing? Or I have had some men actually genuinely be threatened and be worried that I would leave them for a woman. And, you know, I think in any, it's like any relationship, it's like there's a potential to leave them or break their heart
for another person. It has nothing to do with,
I know me personally, I've never left any partner of any gender for another person specifically. It's like the relationship just wasn't moving in the right direction, or, you know, or I've been cheated on actually by men and women, interestingly enough. So, you know, I don't know. And I think it just comes from fear. I think it just comes from people's fear.
Oh, for
and
sure.
Lack of understanding. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely even had a boyfriend say that he had changed me back to a heterosexual.
And did you break up with him like the next day? Cause that's
We did eventually break up. I'm
sorry.
Ashamed to say, it's so bad to say, but the sex was good. So I was like, maybe if I don't listen to him. Yeah, but that didn't work out. But it is just a bi pan myth that bisexuals, pansexuals cheat in general. And I know so many bisexuals who would never, have never. It's like, more than anything, it's the straight people in my life who are cheating. I don't know. That myth obviously was born of the like confusion around bisexuals and what they're going to do next.
Oh, but totally.
That's one of the most annoying ones.
Lesbians cheat too. Like, everybody, not everybody cheats, but
actually,
like,
I know some big lesbian cheaters too.
Yeah. It's like the kids' book, Everybody Poops, but it's Everybody Cheats.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's just most people, I think, have an experience where they either have cheated on someone or they've been cheated on. And I don't think that there's any one like sexuality that owns that.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I just remembered this guy that I ashamedly did not dump the next day after that. It was later told to me by a friend that he was on Tinder while we were still dating. So it's like, you're the one cheating and you're the one who afraid I would cheat and just like plagued me with all these. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've been cheated on. A straight man has cheated on me with a woman, and a lesbian has cheated on me with a woman. So, so you know, it happens. It happens.
Well, some women are tempting. We get it.
Yeah. No, I think that's one of my most frustrating myths. But yeah, in terms of like threatened by it, I mean, there were definitely times in university, because I went to school for opera, and there were definitely times like in the change room, I think sometimes when like some women would be kind of weird about it. because there was like murmurings that I was queer, but there were like murmurings that I was a lesbian because like they didn't understand bisexuality, and I had super short hair at the time because I was also too like very much just like wandering around the village of Montreal, like trying to find community. And I think at that time as well, yeah, it was very much like a statement thing where I was like, well, I guess I just have to like cut off all my hair now and just like wear biker boots forever. And
I did that too.
Yeah.
And I did notice a weirdness in fitting rooms. I have always worked out and gone to gyms and have noticed that I feel a lot more on edge when I had a shorter, more like a shorter haircut, more dykey appearance. Just very aware of that in locker rooms. And then when I present more femme, I don't think anything of it, but I am aware of more butch girls in locker rooms, and I'm not watching them, but I'm just aware of how they're moving around the space because I know they feel that too.
Yeah. Or also when like I do look particularly femme and, you know, say I have a partner who does as well, I find it more nerve-wracking to kiss them goodbye on the street because I've had like weird old men like leering at us or things like that. Whereas, and like, I think more men have issues with, well, actually, you know, women too. Like I've, with, when there are two femme partners, then it's like, because it doesn't fit their vision of what queerness should be. But I don't want to complain about obviously being cis and femme, because I know that also comes with a lot of privilege, and being straight passing comes with a lot of privilege, and, you know, having even, you know, thin privilege or things like that. Like I'm not complaining about or saying like, oh, I'm so oppressed because I am femme. But like, I do remember when I had a particularly femme girlfriend, you know, who was very, very pretty, very, very bleach blonde, like, you know, and people would make more comments to us on the street. Like I actually had like a group of men, like physically break our hands apart on the street. And it was like very much like one of those, you know, like, oh, like you just haven't had the right, like, man yet,
kind of thing.
Whereas like when I was with a woman who, you know, was not, I wouldn't say butch, but just, you know, softer and like, you know, a chapstick lesbian, if you will.
Yes.
But yeah, like in less femme than I was anyway, it was interesting how like no one really looked at us when we were holding hands or displaying public affection.
Yeah, I had a friend, well, I'll say former friend now. there wasn't like any dramatic falling out, but I'm like, I'd prefer not to associate with this person. And he opened up this like bar restaurant thing in Brooklyn. And I was there one night, we're talking, and he was like, oh, you know, we have this like really popular brunch. You and your wife should come by, you know, have a mimosa, maybe make out a little bit. And I was so creeped. I'm like, you're my friend. Like we were on an improv team together. And I'm like, dude, it was just so out of left field. Like he'd never made me feel weird about my sexuality until he told me to come to brunch just to make out with my wife. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Was it to like draw in more customers?
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Like to make it a cool scene. Like, look at these two femme lesbians making out. Like, I don't know. It was so weird. I was like, what kind of comment is this?
Yeah, that's so bizarre that he felt entitled to like tell you to like perform in some sexual way or like affectionate way. Like who would he ever say that to his straight friends? Like that's so bizarre.
Hey Rick, you and your girlfriend should come and make out at brunch tomorrow.
Yeah, never ever would.
Yeah. We talked about one of the big myths being that bisexual people or bipans are just confused. And I'm always torn about this because I feel like lesbians have contributed to this because so many lesbians that I know initially come out, and I don't know if this still happens, but at least the time when I was coming out and for a while, like we all come out as bisexual at first because we think that that's less weird. And then we're like, oh no, we're a lesbian. Like, or like once you have like your first girlfriend, you're like, yeah, no, I'm a lesbian. I just said I was bisexual, but I'm not. And I'm like, we're the ones that are feeding into this myth that like we
you
don't
just hear bisexual and you're triggered and you're brought back to your confusion.
I think a lot of it also comes with people who've dated people who were experimenting, you know, in college or in their early 20s. And, and that's valid and fine too. It's like, feel free to experiment. And if you, like, I've, And I maybe even contributed that too. Like, I remember having some experiences with women who still identify as straight now and are married to men, and you know, being kind of salty about that. But it's like, really, now as someone in my 30s, I look back and I'm like, but they're experimenting. That's cool. And I made them feel safe and like, whatever. It's not me to tell them how to live their life, right, or how to identify. And so I think a lot of that comes from, I think, lesbians who have been hurt by bisexual women. I think a lot of but what's interesting to me is, more often than not, at least in my circle, I have a lot of friends who've like left their husbands and are now with women, or like broke up out of a long-term relationship, mm-hmm, and married women in their mid-30s. And I've actually, right, seen that bisexual, you know, myth that all bi women just settled down with a man. I've actually, like, personally, from a personal anecdotal place, I've seen it go the other way, which I find, right, really interesting. Or women who've like identified as straight their entire lives and then suddenly like meet a woman at 38 and that's their person. It's like, it just doesn't matter. But yeah, I totally feel that. And I feel like, particularly now, because I am with a man, and, you know, there are so many aspects. I don't want to share too many personal details. I'm pretty private about my life, but there are a lot of aspects to our relationship that are not heteronormative or typical, I would say. And I don't think we really play into gender roles, but I understand that, like, he's a cisgender man, and from the outside, we've got all of that privilege. And now more than ever, yeah, I feel this need to like defend my sexuality somehow.
Right.
Which is, yeah, frustrating, but also it's like, yeah, I also can't really complain though, because obviously it's like, well, we're the most privileged in the world now, but.
I feel like bisexual people, it's like they can't win though, because Melody, you have to defend your bisexuality in a relationship to a woman.
Yeah, my girlfriend, you know, she gets it. She's very woke to these ideas, but there's still something in her that hates that I'm a bisexual. And she used to identify as bisexual. Like, when we started dating in mid-2016, and we're both comedians. I would see her go on stage and talk about being a bisexual. So I was like, okay, she gets it. But like, she says through dating me and through just like growing over the years, she's definitely a lesbian now. But like, it's weird that like any compassion, understanding, you know, around those sensitivities that she experienced when she was going back and forth between dating men and women and defending different aspects of each relationship aren't automatically afforded to me. It's like something we are definitely working on. It's not like completely hostile, but it's just, I know it's there. And it comes out in like little, like maybe snarky jokes here or there, but it is like an ongoing conversation and something that we have to address. And she wakes up some mornings just pissed off that has a dream that I've left her for a man. Like, it's something that's clearly an issue here in our relationship that we're still trying to sort out. And when you'd asked earlier about feeling like you have to defend your sexuality, I answered to like the lesbian community side of it, but I definitely especially felt that whenever I've been with a man, and just feeling like completely excommunicated from the community, completely having to feel more like outwardly gay while dating men. It's weird to experience these walls from each side. No matter what, right, I do, there's some sort of like weird adversity there.
I think another myth too is that bisexual people or bipan people aren't as oppressed, even though I don't really feel oppressed as a gay person, but aren't as oppressed as like quote unquote fully gay people. And it's not like it's a contest or anything like that, but it's like when you look at the rates of like depression and the things that bipan people have to struggle with, both from within the community and outside the community, it's a fucking lot. It's a lot.
I see a lot of struggle with my very masculine, whatever that means, you know, outwardly masculine cis friends who are bi men. I think it's really challenging for them because I see a lot of them grappling with the fact, especially like the white ones, they're grappling with the fact that as like a cis white man, they're like, who are able-bodied, they're, you know, they're at the top of the sort of privilege pyramid. And yet they really, I see them really struggle with being bi and not being accepted in either community and really struggling with like the performance aspect of it as well, because I think we have this idea that like, well, you know, queer men are super femme and gay women are super like butch. And it's like, it doesn't, there's a duality, I think, in all of us. And some of it is, you know, more outward than others. And that's something I even struggled with like for a long time, where I felt particularly more so with men. It's like, as soon as I would date men, I would feel this need to like perform femininity in a particular way. So all of a sudden it was like, oh, well, now I absolutely have to shave my armpits all the time. Or like, oh, now I, you know, have to have a full face of makeup on all the time. But then I also love makeup and like glitter sometimes as an art form and expression. And sometimes I feel super powerful when I'm in a pair of heels. But when I was dating women, I would be like, oh, well, I can't be super over the top or super femme, or we're not going to match, or like, you know, or they're not going to be attracted to that. And then I started feeling insecure about my body because I was like, just constantly just wearing like really schlubby clothes, feeling like, oh, well, I have to like perform a certain way. And it was just so silly. And now I think I've really reached a point of just wearing whatever the fuck I want whenever I do. And what I find really interesting is like, you know, most days when I'm just like in a beanie and no makeup and like a big t-shirt, my partner actually finds me like the most attractive, but then he also loves when I'm like super over the top. And, you know, I think that it all kind of, it just like, man, fuck the patriarchy is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
Yeah. But it all just comes from like patriarchy and capitalism as well. It's like, you know, we're told as women to like look a certain way and buy these products and buy this makeup and do this. But then it's like, oh, if you do too much or you get plastic surgery, well, now it's too much. That now you're bad. Now you're immoral. Now you're vain. Now you're not smart. You can't be taken seriously. And it's just like, you can't win. So
no.
I just say like, yeah, to any young like bisexuals and pansexuals of any gender, it's just like, wear what you want, date who you want. Just like, don't be an asshole and just try to drown out the noise. I think I used to be very concerned with, you know, not offending anyone, but to the point where I was censoring myself so much that I wasn't being necessarily as true to myself as I could have been. And I think, you know, being in your 30s is awesome. After like I hit my 30s, I was like, I just don't care about external validation as much. And when you actually find happiness and you're in it, like I'm in such a healthy communicative relationship. It's like the most healthy like relationship I've ever been in, really. It's such a friendship and we talk about everything. And it's just like, and now that I'm happy, it's like I just don't give a shit about what anyone thinks of me.
Yes. And, I was going to say, it is also a 20s versus 30s thing for me too. Like a lot of the experiences I've been drawing upon for like examples for this conversation, I'm realizing are just like such 20-something relationship issues that I was happening, and just like a lot of performing and a lot of like not really looking within until I hit 30 and started presenting how I want, just doing whatever you want to do and finding someone who's okay with that. That wasn't, unfortunately, a thing until a few years ago.
Well, and when we talk about myths too, I mean, when I think of my 20s and my early 20s, like I know I believed some of these myths, or I had, you know, just really ignorant thoughts about bisexual women of like, oh yeah, the thing you said about bisexual men really being gay and bisexual women being really straight. I used to say that all the time until I got out in the real world and was like, oh wait. And then you actually like meet people and you're like, this isn't true at all. But that's kind of like the message that you receive, and you want to think like, oh yeah, I know what's up. Like,
it was so pushed in media too.
Definitely pushed in media.
And then that's why I think a lot of the younger generation is so fluid and open and not like beholden to certain labels right away, because they are on TikTok and just exposed to so many more options. And
right. I mean, when we talk about bisexual representation on TV, like a lot of it for so long, it was always like women were bisexual for purposes of either deception or like a ratings gimmick before they went sweeps. Back to men. Yeah, yeah, sweeps. That was the word I was looking for. And then those are, like, that was before social media was really big when I was younger. So I went out into the world with these ideas of, like, what a bisexual person was. And I'm so, I try not to be, like, too hard on my former self, but it is, like, really embarrassing to be like, wow, I can't believe I used to think that way. Or I used to say, like, I remember after having the first kiss with this girl who is bisexual, I said, see, aren't women better? Like, I'm like, what a fucking disgusting, weird, like, unattractive comment to make. But I was like, yeah, that was a great kiss that showed her, that showed that bisexual. Like, you know?
Yeah, and I'm sure dudes have that feeling too, yeah, sometimes.
It's so unattractive. And I'm mortified by
that. I mean, for the most part, women are better. No. Like, that's a funny thing too, is like when I think about my experiences with men and women, it's like I'd say like 99% of my experiences with women have been really positive, and then like maybe 50% of my experiences with men.
Right.
And like, you know, but yeah, I think this, people just really don't get it, but whatever, just be who you want to be and do what you want right. to do. And like, I think, even for men too, it all really comes from like this toxic masculinity as well. It's like, we just have to drop that as well.
And it's not limited to men. Toxic masculinity is.
Oh like, yeah.
Definitely not limited to yes. men.
I used to say that I had like a toxic, not like other girls syndrome, right? Because it's like we associated coolness and power and all of these things with like quote unquote masculine traits or with men. And so it was like to enjoy anything that would be seen as quote unquote girly was bad. And it's like, you know, one of those things where you'd be like just one of the boys and that somehow made you better. And I find like as I get older, the majority of my friends now are women. And as a child, I would have never imagined that. And it's just cool that like, as you get older, you're like, wait a minute, like patriarchy and masculine people have just been pitting us against each other this whole time. And right. it's actually really dope to be like who we are. So,
yeah, it's like we form these stereotypes in our society to try to make things just like easier to understand and like an easier way to comprehend a lot of information. But like the truth is that everybody is so unique and different. And, you know, going back to that whole thing about being confused, like if it's totally okay and 1,000,000% valid to change your labels like as much as you need to as you're on this road of discovery. But like being, you know, discovering things about yourself or even like evolving or whatever it is, that doesn't equate confusion necessarily. And if you are confused, that's okay too. Life is confusing. Sexuality can be confusing. And it's always used as like such like a negative thing. And, you know, it takes kind of like living through your 20s almost to get to a space where you're like, okay, I can just do what I want and be what I want and do what makes me happy. And that's what's most important. And it's not what people might be right. snickering about but behind my back.
I only recently figured it out, you know, like it takes a long right. time. And I don't know what it is lately, but it seems like a younger and younger demographic is really trying to make that stamp. And it, I don't know, it makes me a little sad. I really want people to understand that it's like a long process and a journey, and it takes a lot of just experience.
There's no one coming out, you know, I think it's like you're constantly coming out regardless of how you identify, over and over again to different people in your life. And again, it's okay if it changes. I mean, it goes to circle back to like the biggest myth of like all bi women end up with men. The just the term end up with someone, like
right. Yeah.
makes me feel sick. Like and that's not to say I don't believe in long-term relationships or monogamy or that there's right. a person out there for me, you know, who I will have children with. It might be my current partner now. And, you know, but even when we talk about that, it's like, I don't have this unrealistic expectation. It's like, hey, I'm going to promise to hold love in my heart for you for right. forever. And I will respect you forever, but I can't promise that I'm going to be in love with you forever. And like, hey, I think I'd love to be with you for like 10 years, you know, at least.
Let's just and then love
like,
each other. Let's,
yeah, like marriage should be a 5-year renewable contract, personally, I think.
Yes, I've thought this, I've said this, I totally agree.
Yeah. But it's nice because you like check in with each other. Like there, you know, there are benefits. Yeah. So much of our society is still built around marriage. So I get it for like, now I used to be.
Which is funny because they fail so much though.
I know.
Like, speaking as a divorced person, people like, I remember a lot of my friends being like who haven't gotten married yet. And they're like, oh my gosh, I'm in my 30s. I haven't gotten married. I'm like, I'm in my 30s and I'm divorced. So what does it even mean? Like, why is that a goal of getting married by a certain age when it can also just go away in an instant? Like, and then you're no longer married. So like you have to stop having that as being like the end goal. Just do like find relationships that fulfill you.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And I used to be like vehemently like anti-marriage from the time I was a little kid. It was really weird. Like I was in a production of Fiddler on the Roof when I was in high school. I went to a music theater school for performing arts. And in my high school production, when I played Seidel, my dad leaned over to my mom and he was like, betcha that's the only time you're going to see her in a white dress. Which is like, I've played married people on TV now. So I don't know. No, movies, I totally got married in a movie. So I've been in a white dress before, but you know, it was like always this, I was always like, no, 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 that was never a goal. And now I'm kind of looking at it where I'm like, oh, like I get it, I think, but I don't think of it as this like, yeah, forever thing. Also like one of us could die. Like, I don't know. Right. And like, right. If say I died, like my ghost isn't going to be mad that my partner finds a new wife or something, you know, I'm going to be like, cool, right. Good for you. Like, that's so nice. Like my great uncle, not by blood, it was my Auntie Jean's husband. After she passed, he was so worried about different generation. He was born in the 30s, but he was like, a woman asked him to dance at a like swing bar. It was like jazzy swing music. And he was like afraid to dance. You know, and then like finally he did go out with this one lady, and like now he's just turned 90 and she's like in her late 80s and they're like teenagers in love. And you know, yes. It doesn't mean that they didn't love their previous partners,
right.
Either, right?
Right?
Like you can just find love multiple times throughout your life. And I do believe that there are people we're meant to be with for certain amounts of time or cross paths with, but I don't believe in one soulmate, you know? It's like I believe in multiple kindred spirits.
Yeah, I believe in multiple soulmates. A lot of my spiritual friends will say we have multiple soulmates and then we have our twin flame. That's our the ultimate soulmate that you end up with. But I'm very much of the belief of just multiple soulmates. I love that you brought up that point of just ending up with someone, like that a bisexual woman would end up with a man, because you're taking someone's narrative and putting it on someone else. So that's right. Just false from the beginning. Like it makes right. No sense. And I've never thought of it that way.
You know, I'd love to think that these myths have been busted and all this information is out there.
We did it.
We've evolved. We did it. You know, if it didn't happen before, it happened after this podcast.
Yeah, right, but now we did it.
This episode.
Myths busted.
Work is done.
The end.
I know. But I'm always having to remind myself, like, what a bubble I live in, where because I choose to be friends with people who are more accepting and more progressive and fluid and, you know, really just open to the idea that anyone can be anything and it's valid, that I forget that there's still just so many in the community who struggle with this. So I hope hearing more of these stories and experiences help to combat that, so people can just be true to themselves and, you know, not get so caught up in other people's ignorance, I guess. Is that the way to put it?
Yeah. Or just outside forces.
Yeah.
In general, you know?
Yeah. No, I fully agree. Everyone should just do what they want, but also get a COVID test before you do what you want.
Absolutely.
Yes. Oh, man. Yeah.
Take that FaceTime date and, you know, vet and be safe.
I just wish and I hope that people pivot and actually start treating this like extra caution as a normal thing. Cause I was thinking about how, you know, people are like, oh, well, don't worry, I got a COVID test. And like, I checked for COVID before I went out on this date. And I'm like, imagine if everyone did that with STDs as well. Like,
yes.
Like, you know, now we're normalizing, okay, getting tested and making sure we're healthy before we all fuck each other. And it's like, great. But also like, let's do that for like everything. Maybe like, I don't know. It's amazing how much shame there is around that. Now people don't talk about it. And
they should make STD tests free. I mean, I know some different types are, and there are some places that you can go maybe in the U.S. I don't know.
Oh, right, right. Okay.
It's different in the U.S.
That's the other thing with, like, Canadians. I was like, you have no excuse. I was like, it's free. Go. Like, I honestly, but it's a good, like, meter as well. You know, I straight up, like, and I also just because, like, I guess I was 29 at the time, but I was like, you know, and I'm almost 30. And like when I met my partner, I was like, literally, I need you to get a test and show me like when was the last time you were tested. And I just like flat out said that. And I was like, here's when I was, here's mine. Great. And I was like, I don't give a fuck. Cause like, I was like, if this person, you know, reacts weirdly, then I just know it's not the right person. And I don't know. Some people think it takes the romanticism out of things, but I'm like, no, I don't think it does. Like if someone's, I think it's almost more romantic that someone's like willing to put, willing to put your safety first.
Discernment. I love it. I really do hope, I think it will carry over maybe into just like overall safety with dating after this pandemic.
I hope people wear masks on the subway forever.
Mm-hmm. That part.
Oh my gosh. I know. I actually kind of love.
Hope. I will.
Oh, I will. I kind of love wearing a mask all the time now because it's the coldest month of the year here in Toronto, Canada.
Oh, it's so great in winter. Yes.
Yeah. My face is warm. My lips have not been chapped once. Every time I walk the dog, my lips would get super chapped in the winter. And I'm like, this is amazing. My face is protected.
Yes.
Also get catcalled a lot less now. Although now when I do, it's like quite shocking. I'm like, really, really? Like people must be really desperate because I was like, I am in a very like weird sweatsuit outfit that's like has mustard stains on it and you can't even see my face and my hair isn't washed in 3 days. Really?
In like April or March, April, like after lockdown, we were just starting to come out. Catcalling was just not happening on my street where it normally happens so much and it is happening again. But like, yeah, you're not getting like chased down the block if you like ignore someone anymore. Or like I even fake coughed recently to get a man to leave me alone. Nice. And it worked. I pretended to have a huge coughing fit and lowered my mask. I was outside to like cough like even more dramatically into my hand and like arm. And he walked away.
That my is wife such does that a when hot get tip.
Too close.
Yes, do that.
My wife is always, if somebody is getting too close to her, even like in a store when everybody has a mask on, she'll just like start coughing so that people back away.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one. I used to, when I was in the subway, if a man was being very strange to me or trying to talk to me, sometimes I would pull out, this is like pre-AirPods, you know, this is... Gosh, I probably didn't even have an iPod back then, but what was I playing? A Discman? Probably. I would take out my headphones and like put them on and then like have them on my lap, like on like one of my textbooks or something, like not plugged into anything. And then just like, and I was insane and like pretend I was listening to music.
Oh,
and I'd like sing along to like nothing to get people to leave me alone. Now I can just cough. Amazing.
Natasha, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Where can people follow you on social media if they're not already? Or are there any projects that you would love to direct them to that they should watch?
Yeah, I too started a podcast like every other asshole in quarantine did. It's called Vanless Presents. It's the podcast nobody asked for, and it's just real talk with me, Natasha Nagovanless, and friends.
Believe it or not, the people who listen to this love podcasts, so this is a great place to plug it.
Oh my goodness, great. Okay, well, listen to my podcast where I just talk to people who are more interesting than me. And then also you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Nat Vanless, V-A-N-L-I-S.
Perfect. Thank you so much for diking out with us, if you'll take the term.
Oh, bye. I biked out. With
actually,
you.
A listener sent me a hat that says bike, and I love it.
I love that. Yeah, with a Y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
I love it.
I've worn it to all the queer spaces since then.
Yes.
Just it does so much so quick, so efficiently. I love it.
Fuck yeah. That's great. I love that. Yeah. Well, it was a pleasure biking out.
Yes.
Yes.
It was fantastic. So okay, I'll stop talking now. Goodbye.
I just want to say that if you aren't following her already, definitely give Natasha a follow, because in addition to all of her acting and performing, she does a lot of great activism work and is just like a really cool person. For anybody wondering, you know, what's Natasha like in real life? Lovely.
So lovely.
Lovely and cool and doing good stuff, and definitely someone you should be aware of if you weren't already. But we know so many of you are Carmilla stans and are like, who doesn't know who she is? Well, I didn't until my first time at Klexicon, okay?
Yeah, so hard to get off the Zoom call. Just a really cool person. I was holding my pee until it hurt after the after the interview. We chatted for a while, and that's someone you really want to be friends with.
That's how we know when to stop talking. It's when Melody's bladder waves the white flag.
I know. And ever since I got my Soda Stream, these interviews have been so much more painful in that way. But just the mark of a good guest. Let's get into our listener question. A new roommate moved into my 7-person big college party house. At first, the two
remember those days.
I've actively repressed them. Absolutely. At first, the two of us had a really good connection. She seemed really fun, and I just vibed with her. We started hanging out and began getting pretty close, and I was really excited since I certainly haven't made any new friends since the plague started. I have a lovely girlfriend who I've been in a relationship with for over a year now, and things are pretty serious. My roommate knows this and was getting to be good friends with her, too. So anyway, my new roommate confronted me last week, asserting that I had, quote, tried to kiss her. Yikes. I was absolutely shocked because I had no idea what I had done to make her think that. I had never made any advances, never had any romantic feelings for her, and certainly did not want to kiss her. I still don't think I did anything that would suggest that I wanted to be with her. But she seems really hurt, really uncomfortable, and betrayed. I asked her why she thought I had wanted to kiss her, and she said, "I could see it in your face." Oh my God. I can't help but react. Okay, sorry.
I didn't edit this question down just because it's like the details here are
what?
Needed.
I could see it in your face. Obviously, this didn't make any... You know what? She probably has been watching too many gay movies, this straight girl played by straight actresses. She's like, I saw that longing. I know that you looked at me for a long time, so you obviously right. wanted to end up with me behind our husband's backs. Okay.
You were staring at me from 2 football fields away for too long a time.
Eye contact. You know that harassment. Okay. Obviously, this didn't make any sense to me. She also told all of my other roommates before she talked to me.
Gasp.
I told her that she was being lesophobic. Love it. And she simply said, "I'm bi. I'm gay too."
Yes, add that inflection to it, Melody. Yes.
Oh, this is too much. As if a queer person can't be homophobic. Say that. She had PTSD and has been the victim of abuse on many occasions, which makes this whole situation very delicate. Okay, now I feel like an asshole for laughing. I feel as though she thinks I'm a predatory lesbian, but I truly, honestly, genuinely never did anything. This makes me so scared to make any female friends, and I just don't know where to go from here. I don't want straight or bi girls to think I want them just because of my sexual identity. Any advice?
Oh, boy. There is a lot here.
Yeah.
And I totally understand why this is a delicate situation, because you don't want to invalidate this person's feelings. But my take on it is you say, look, we're good friends, and I'm so sorry that you might have experienced something one way, but I'm telling you honestly, as your friend, that I don't have feelings for you. I didn't try to kiss you. I think it must be a misunderstanding. And if you can trust me on that, then there's no reason to feel hurt or to feel threatened. I love my girlfriend. I hope we can be friends, but I'm really at a loss of what to do because I don't want to do anything to make you feel uncomfortable. And I really can't think of what I would have done. Just, I think, be really honest while also not trying to make her feel like she's being gaslit, I guess, because, yeah, it sounds like it's definitely about something else. I'm sure that it was nothing you did and that they have some type of issue. My thought is also, because this does sound kind of extreme.
Yeah, it's important to note this is an extreme case. And as you move forward in your life, making friends with straight or bi girls, this probably won't be an issue to this degree, right?
Yes. This I wouldn't be afraid to be friends with people because of this instance. I think this person obviously has some issues to work through. Is it also crazy that I think that maybe there's a chance that she said that just to get a reaction?
Yes.
And maybe has feelings?
I think she's the one. I was waiting to say this.
Okay.
I think she wants to kiss you.
Yes.
Because the like mental gymnastics I'm seeing here, like, or just the making this such a big deal. Like, there's something else there.
I think that that's what it is. I think because that sounds like, I know people who would pull a move like that and be like, who like someone and then they're like, you tried to kiss me just to get the reaction and maybe feel out the waters. It, like, a very bad way to go about it.
Terrible.
Would never recommend that. And then when you were like, no, absolutely not, I don't have feelings for you, then she was really hurt.
That's
and
the rejection.
Kind of double down, and it's the rejection, and it's not really her being mad at thinking that you were like being predatory, that, you know, and then the whole thing of like, well, I'm bi too, like, sexuality has nothing to do with what just happened here.
Yeah. It's a real lack of social skills.
Yeah, I mean, if it is the case where she wasn't just like testing the waters in a weird and wrong way, then I think you're right in thinking that is lesbophobic. I remember when my college roommate freshman year found out I was gay, she said to a friend of mine on the hall, like, well, what if she like stares at me when I like get out of the shower and I just have my towel wrapped around me in the room? And I was like, do not flatter yourself, honey. I am definitely not checking you out. and, you know, people make those kind of comments, and I did nothing to ever imply. And lo and behold, drunk at a bar one night, this person tried to make out with me.
Don't
so,
you know it. Like, I had a roommate once who was, like, just the straightest party girl. Like,
yep.
It's always them. And she knew I was gay. It's weird. There was never weirdness until she found this out. And then she was the one. It's like suddenly she was so naked all the time. And she was like, can you help me with this? Like, calling me into her room to like help zip her up. And it was very obvious because she was just this party girl and was just drunk. Like, I could tell she was trying to get my attention because some girls just love attention, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it could be maybe she has like PTSD and it's like her. Yes, that is like a delicate situation. But I've just encountered a lot of straight or maybe deep down bi curious girls who a lot of it's on them. They're trying to navigate the situation and like gauge whether or not you're attracted to them because they might be working through their own questioning of their own queerness.
Yeah, I mean, as we just talked about in this episode, if she's bi, there could be a chance that she's dealing with like a lot of feelings around like what that means for her and what that means for her to have these relationships and how she might be afraid of how she's being perceived and judged. And that all goes to say it's something going on with her, and rest assured it's nothing you did. And it's it happens to a lot of us that there's always some type of incident like this, but they're few and far between, and don't let that scare you off of female friendships, which can be wonderful.
Yeah. I don't want straight or bi girls to think I want them. I just want to address that, like, that chance is always there more with, like, making friends with gay girls, especially. Like, it's just, like, going to be a thing, you know, always, yeah, too. There's always, like, I'm still always, to a degree, when I meet a new girl, queer or not, like, I just have to sit back and think, wait, am I attracted to this person? Like, yeah. And, like, if once I find out they're queer, I'm like, wait, am I? Because you just, because there's a, it's a scarcity mentality.
Right, right. And be like, oh, am I giving off vibes? And I don't, because I don't even realize it when I'm giving off vibes with men. Yeah. And, like, I don't know how to purposefully flirt. So I think it happens accidentally with me sometimes. And I'm like, yeah, I wonder how many people really think that I might have been flirting with them when I definitely wasn't.
Oh, tons. I'm just like a natural flirt. And yeah, I don't really realize it. But like, if you were to look at past interactions, objectively hitting on people. And now I'm like, yeah, fuck, I am this predator.
Well, on that note... If you want to follow this predatory dyke, I'm at TGI Carolyn.
Ooh, be a predator on my social media. I'm at Melody Kamali on all social platforms.
And you can follow us at Dyking Out on Instagram and on Twitter, and at Dyking Out Pod on TikTok. You don't stop.
I was like, well, is she doing a Donald Trump? And then you said, you know, so,
hey, the opposite.
TikTok, you don't stop. See you there. And we'll see you next Tuesday.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you. Find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.